Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Creative control, creative control. Comedy, art, and sometimes rock and roll. Let's do a public opinion poll. Raise your hand if you love creative control. 'Cause when Vish is unleashed, well, you... Oh, sorry, I didn't see you there. I was just working on a tribute song to my favorite podcast, Creative Control, with Vish Khanna. My name is Matthias, and I play in a band called The Burning Hell. But more importantly, I support Creative Control on Patreon, and I think you should too. Quality long-form arts journalism is like a magical talking unicorn. It definitely exists, but it can be really hard to find. Fortunately for us, Vish makes it easy with hundreds of funny, thought-provoking, well-researched, and engaging interviews with artists from all over the world. Your flexible monthly donation on Patreon will get you plenty of special exclusive treats and help Vish keep his podcast well-fed and cared for properly, the way a magical unicorn deserves.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
1, 2, 3, 4, I count mountains. 1, 2, 3, counter, you're a cool thing, count mountains. 1, 2, 3, 4, I count mountains.
Rachel Brown and Nate Amos are acclaimed and gifted musicians who currently call Brooklyn, New York, home. Brown is originally from Chicago, where they dabbled in comedy and music before moving to New York. Amos is originally from Vermont and was partners with Brown for a period, but now, as friends, they collaborate as the wonderful musical duo Water From Your Eyes. Formed in 2016, Water From Your Eyes broke through with their 2021 album Structure, but garnered even more attention for their emotive and kaleidoscopic record, Everyone's Crushed, which was released by Matador Records on May 26, 2023. On November 13th of that same year, a remix record was released called Crushed by Everyone, and sometime shortly after that, Rachel, Nate, and I connected for a good talk about things like life in Brooklyn and living near grade schools, comparing Chicago and New York and the importance of local arts and music communities, bluegrass, the Beatles, and Ween, the stand-up to singing pipeline, what punk means to different people, theatricality and not overthinking things, painting and music, touring in 2024, CanCon, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. That is the best way to support me making a living doing work like this. So if you can, head over to our Patreon today and support the show. Today there are some nice gifts and perks to doing so. Learn more at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you very much. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and a website, blackbird.ca, where you can go and type in things you're looking for. And they, if they've got them, they'll ship them right to your house. Say you want a copy of this new Water From Your Eyes album, Everyone's Crushed. Well, you just go to the blackbird.ca, type it in, see if they can get, if they got it. And if they can't, if they don't have it, they'll get it for you and they'll ship it right to your house. It's just that simple. Support independent music stores like Blackbird Music today, if you can. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 831 of Creative Control, featuring Rachel and Nate from Water From Your Eyes, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Rachel. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Bed-Stuy right now, New York.
Ah, nice. How are things going there?
Good. Seems like it's recess outside. It's nice out. Sunny. Blue skies.
I presume you live near a school. Is it recess for an office building or?
That'd be a lot funnier if there's like a bunch of grown adults in suits playing soccer. I live across the street from a school.
Oh, nice. I think that can be, sometimes I walk by, my kids go to schools and I look at the houses nearby and I'm like, I wonder if this is both, you know, inspiring and also kind of hell on earth. Cause I couldn't do this show if I lived right by a school. It'd be chaos. There'd be noise all the time. Is it inspiring, or are you ever like, keep it down out there, will you?
Sometimes it is really nice to wake up to the sound of children laughing, but other times it makes me feel really bad that I'm waking up at lunchtime.
I see. Sleep schedules. Does it ever wake you up before lunchtime?
No, it seems like they're in class. It's in the morning.
Oh, okay. All right, good.
So they kind of only ever come outside at lunchtime, and if I'm still in my bed, it's either like really nice that I'm like, oh, like kids are out having like beautiful growing lives. They're just having fun. I remember that, and sometimes I'm like, wow, I'm really in my 20s and it's 1 p.m. and I'm not doing anything today.
You know, you're so close in some ways in your 20s. You're a young adult. You're so close to, I don't know how old these kids are, but you're relatively close to their age. I mean, more than I am. Does anything they say or do outside your window, does it inspire you to write?
Yeah. I feel like, again, when I'm in like a better mood and I think about how beautiful it is to be a child and not how disappointing it is to be an adult without a proper routine, on those days, yeah, I feel like when I've journaled a few times in the morning or afternoon, it's been like, wow, like life is really so beautiful, like things can change what feels like so quickly, but I guess in reality it's actually pretty slow because I guess I'm probably at least 15 years older than these children.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're contemporary, but you're close.
It feels like I'm a lot closer than I think in like reality I am. Like there's been a couple times, because there's also like a basketball court that they're playing on, and I sometimes I play basketball, and a couple times these like 12-year-olds have challenged me to play them one-on-one, and I think, like, that's probably about the same skill level, because I stopped playing basketball when I was maybe 14.
Hmm.
But then, after we finish the game, it feels actually like I am a lot older and I should not be playing 12-year-olds in basketball.
Yeah, I play with a 12-year-old all the time, my son, and have been for many years before he was 12, and he's gotten good. I'm not that, I just try to play with him, and he's playing organized ball now, and I'm not trying to brag, but he's the best player on the team. And I think it has something to do with playing with an older... What I'm saying is you might be more instructive to them than you realize. It might be helping
them. Yeah, I think the last time I played, it only happened twice. The first time I didn't try that hard because I thought that'd be really embarrassing to try really hard and then beat a kid. Yeah. But then this kid talked so much smack.
Yeah, they do that.
Actually, after when he won, I was like, I feel terrible. So, like, the next summer, this other kid challenged me to play, and I was like, yeah, you know what? And I'm gonna bring it, because this kid can't. And so I beat him. But also during the game, he kept missing and being like, man, that's so gay. And I was like, hey, actually being gay is cool, and you shouldn't say that, like, when you miss. Like, you should choose a different word. And he was like, yeah, okay, that's a really good point. And I was like, all right, great, we are making progress.
Good for you. Yeah, you're building character by teaching them that life is not always going to work out for them by losing that basketball, but you're also teaching them how to be a better person. That's great. See?
Yeah.
That's the
And
hope.
I let him tell his friend that he beat me, because he was like, I can't believe I'm going to have to tell my other 12-year-old friend that I got beat by a girl.
Right.
And I was like, I wasn't even going to try to attempt to explain the non-binary identity, so I was just right. like, yeah, that's, you can say you won.
I appreciate your consideration of not uploading too much information onto this kid. You gave him as much as you could, and hopefully he'll figure it out. No, that's great. That's nice. Well, thank you for joining us on this call, and beyond my listeners, we've neglected someone who's listening into us. Nate, are you there?
I am here.
Nice to meet you as well. Thank you for being on the call. Where in the world are you?
I am also in Bed-Stuy.
Huh.
Also nice. Across the street from a basketball court and a school.
School? And a school.
Yeah. But I can't see out my window right now, okay. So I have no idea what's going on.
I wonder if the recesses are synced up across Bed-Stuy today, but you're not hearing any milling about outside your window.
No. To be entirely honest, now that I'm thinking about it, I really haven't seen any, like, kids out there since I got back. So I don't know if that means that winter vacation started early, or I'm just always asleep when the kids are at school. Usually there are, like, all these school buses lined up, and everyone is honking outside my window because they can't get past the school buses. But now that we're talking about it, I haven't witnessed that since we got back from tour. So I don't know what's going on.
I hope the school hasn't been shut down or abandoned or something.
Yeah, I hope not.
Yeah, you would know that, wouldn't you? There'd be signs saying toxic waste, stay away, those sorts of things.
Yeah, I'd hope so. Yeah. I don't know. I don't really like go over there and like be like, no, I wonder what's going on at the school right now.
No, that's probably a good thing. Frankly, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
the door being like, where are the children?
I neglected to ask Rachel this question. How long have you been in Bed-Stuy and in New York, Nate?
A little more than 6 years now.
Huh. And where are you from originally?
Home base is Vermont. I kind of moved around a lot as a kid.
Oh, okay.
But Vermont is like where my family is and stuff.
Hmm. And what brought you to Brooklyn?
Rachel and needing to get out of Chicago.
Right, right. That's where you met?
Yeah, we met in Chicago.
Okay, cool. So, Rachel, same trajectory around 6 years in New York?
No, I've been here for 8 years.
Oh.
I moved here for school, for college. And then, yeah, Nate moved 2 years after me.
I see. Okay. And you live?
Yeah, I'm
Mm-hmm. No, you go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say I moved from Chicago because that's where I'm from, and that's where that's where we met.
Nice. Do you miss Chicago?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love Chicago. I think it's really a wonderful city. I miss, my parents are still there, so I miss them. And a lot of my friends have moved back there and still live there. So it's, I miss it, but I also don't think I would want to move back, at least yet. I still really like living in, it took me 4 years to stop trashing New York. I used to be like, Chicago's the greatest city in the world. New York has nothing on it. And then, like, 4 years into living here, I was like, all right, actually, I think I like it here.
It's an interesting trajectory this just came up on the show. I had Fred Armisen and Steve Albini on together recently. And Armisen talked about how in the late 80s, he's from New York originally, and he and his band were having, it's expensive to live in New York, and they were just, one of them went to school in Chicago. So they moved to Chicago, and that's where he felt like they could thrive a bit more. And you guys have had the opposite trajectory. Nate, did you feel comfortable and as part of like a musical community when you were in Chicago? Was it hard to leave, that sort of thing?
Yeah, there was definitely a scene there that I had a lot of fun being a part of. But it never felt like living in Chicago was the goal. I went out there initially for school, and I kind of the whole time I was thinking about where I would live next. So I liked being there a lot, but I always intended on leaving at a certain point.
Yeah. Okay. And you're liking it in New York?
Yeah, I love New York. And beyond like being like, I like would love to have like a little house somewhere. Like I don't really like, I'm not constantly thinking about, how do I leave New York? It's kind of the first place I've lived where I felt comfortable in like a long-term sense.
Yeah. Okay. Rachel, you grew up in Chicago? Is that what you were getting at?
Oh, yeah, I grew up there.
So you would have sort of observed different music communities. It's a transient place, like a lot of sort of college, university towns. Young people come in, they do a bunch of stuff. It kind of alters the landscape, ideally, in some ways, for the better, because all the businesses and people have to be like, these young people always want something new. I got to keep up with all the young people, so we better install a Wi-Fi machine or whatever they have to do. And then they move on, and then there's a new influx of young people. So I personally think, sorry, I'm just giving you a slight rant and theory, but I think university and college towns have to adapt to an influx of young people and transients in some ways. And I don't know why I went on this tangent other than to suggest, I think that can also impact the arts and culture communities in those places. Being from Chicago and probably having an entry point into different music communities and different arts scenes, were there any particular things about or eras of Chicago that were meaningful for you and inform what you're doing now?
I don't know. I didn't really grow up around any arts communities per se. Actually, a lot of the people that I grew up with, their families are from Chicago. And, like, I feel like it's either, like, you're from Chicago or your parents are from, like, another Midwestern state and, like, wanted to live in the biggest city close enough to, like, their families. So for me, it didn't really feel like a place that people left. I mean, even, like, now, like, almost all my best friends from high school still live there. And, like, oh yeah, a lot of my friends from grade schools, like, their families have been there for, like, ever. I mean, even my grandma's from Chicago.
So people stay. Generally, people, you're saying, they tend to stay.
I feel like Chicago is a place where people stay. There's not really, I mean, if you're thinking about, like, moving out of Chicago, it's like you could move to New York or, I guess, LA, but that's kind of, like, a completely different place. And so, like, there's not a bigger place to move to. Like, for me, Chicago, like, wasn't, like, a college town. Like, I grew up in a neighborhood that now is really different. So it feels like it's getting, you know, like how every city is, where it's getting, you know, gentrified and people are being forced out of the communities they've been living in. But yeah, for me, it doesn't feel like a transient place. Like, I feel like I'm actually one of the few, me and my brother both left, but I feel like a lot of the people we grew up with and our friends are all still there.
Hmm. Okay.
And don't plan on moving.
That's fair. I think what I was hoping to get to, and sorry for taking us down a irrefutable road. You're like, hey, that hasn't been my situation. What I really wanted to get to, I suppose, is like what inspired you as a young Chicagoan. And Nate, I'll ask you the same question about your time in Vermont. I want to kind of get at that origin story stuff in terms of what maybe opened your eyes to music and arts and culture when you were younger and not schooling kids on the basketball court. I mean, like really young. So I want to get to that in a moment. What I have neglected to say is congratulations on your new record. You've had a lot of success this year, and I know it must be heady, but I want to talk about this record. And I think where it seems to distinguish itself from your back catalog, I mean, it's telling to me that your new album starts with a song that's titled after your previous record, from what I can tell. Like, there's some continuity stuff going on that you're aware of, but also I think it's different. So I want to get into all these things. But back to what I was getting at first there, the origin story stuff. And Nate, I'm going to go to you. Do you have any sort of sense recall of what got you into music as a very young child, a person just discovering the world of music?
Well, my dad is a musician. He's a bluegrass musician. So that was pretty much it. I was like very much surrounded by music from a very early age, kind of a split between experiencing a lot of bluegrass in person and listening to like a lot of like classic rock, essentially. You know, I think the closest thing to like a religion I had as a kid was like the Beatles, essentially.
Right.
But it was just like a big focus early on. I took piano lessons and was kind of fixated on music from a very early age.
Bluegrass to piano is interesting. Bluegrass is a very, I think it demands virtuosity. I mean, that's what I think of when I think of bluegrass. The people who play it can really play it. But you took to the piano. Did you explore bluegrass in your own pursuits?
Yeah, well, so piano is the only instrument that I ever took any formal lessons in. But by the time I was in fifth grade, I think I was playing guitar. And then in terms of bluegrass, like I kind of figured out my way around like mandolin and banjo. And the only instrument that I could really hold my own in the context of playing with other people is upright bass.
Okay.
Because I feel like a lot of the other instruments, you know, the bar for playing in bluegrass is so high. Like, you can't really, because in bluegrass, it's like every instrument, for the most part, in like, you know, the core lineup is a rhythm instrument. So in order to get good enough at, you know, banjo or mandolin that you can really function in a band setting, that's like, you know, you have to really, really put in the hours. And I was never really just particularly focused on bluegrass in a way that lent itself to that. Upright bass was more kind of, you know, that was a simpler thing to get down and had a lot more overlap with the kinds of music that I was more interested in. For whatever reason, that came very easily to me, kind of like, you know, playing drums and stuff. Is if you have like a basic understanding of it and a good sense of rhythm, you can play upright bass in a bluegrass setting.
It's fascinating because a lot of what you describe, you know, it can be busy music, it can be frenetic, it can be all sorts of things, obviously, all of those instruments. But I pick up on a particular affinity for noise in this project. Do you know where that kind of came from for you instrumentally? Clatter?
You know, I think that was something that developed a little later on. I'm not really sure when that became a focus. I was very interested in kind of more like sound design for a while. And, you know, I feel like a lot of my interests more in that area kind of came out of like, you know, the period of, at least for me in the context of art, you reach a certain age and you instinctually reject like everything that you grew up with. And, you know, pure noise was kind of like the complete opposite of bluegrass, which is very much like strictly like rhythm and melody, and there's a particular way that you do it. And so noise is, there's no rhythm, there's no melody, and there's no particular way to do it. So it's kind of the polar opposite in a lot of ways.
But to be reductive about it, because it can be all sorts of different things, bluegrass, I think, can be rather incessant. Like, just constant sound. There's not a lot. I mean, there's...
Definitely.
Pot, you know what I'm getting at? So there's like a... Yeah. I don't mean incessant in a negative way. It's just there's just constantly something happening usually in a bluegrass.
Oh, yeah. It's relentless. And
okay.
There's a very
different word. Yeah.
There's a very particular way to do it. There are a lot of rules if you want to, you know, because bluegrass is particularly interesting because it's not even, I mean, to a certain point it developed organically, but more so than other genres, you know, it was a particular formula that was invented by a person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was like, this is bluegrass. These are the rules. You have these instruments and they play these roles and you can bring in these other things. But if you change the basic formula too much, then it's just not really bluegrass anymore.
Yeah.
And that has changed. It's obviously evolved, but still from a technical point, you know, it's a very, very particular thing.
Yeah.
At least in its first couple decades of existing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Rachel, kind of a similar question about your musical origin story, I suppose. Do you have a sense of what first grabbed your ear and what inspired you to think, I kind of want to learn more about this? I kind of want to immerse myself more in this. I kind of want to try it. Do you have any sense memory of that?
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, my parents both really love music. They're not musicians, but like my mom, I feel like loves singing along to songs, like in the car and on the radio. And my dad's always been like really into live music. I remember though, I mean, also I grew up in a, I went to Catholic school. So like I grew up going to church and like singing, just not in choir, just like at the normal, in the normal part of the audience. And I feel like I really enjoyed music. But my parents have these friends that live in Michigan, and we were, like, visiting maybe for Thanksgiving or something, and it was, like, somebody's cousin's brother or something, and he brought a guitar and, like, a piano and was, like, playing in the living room, and I remember just being like, oh, like, because before that, I feel like I'd only ever heard it in either church settings or like really like a concert setting, but it had never just been like, oh, you can do this like at a house, like you can just be a person and like learn how to play an instrument. And then I think I won a raffle for guitar lessons, and then for a long time it was just something I did privately, like playing guitar and like writing my own music. And then towards the end of high school, like when I was a senior, I started going to shows with my friend Gabby, and that's how I ended up meeting Nate, was like in this like DIY community in Chicago, and I realized that there were people doing it, like young people playing, making music, and like having community. And I was really shy, but I had done stand-up for a little bit before, and so I feel like if I hadn't done that, I don't think I ever would have had the confidence to like do music publicly.
Whoa, hold the phone. What prompted you to take up stand-up? I need to know about that. I like comedy.
When I was 12, my parents were like, what do you want to do with your life? And I was like, oh man, I liked SNL.
Yeah.
And I liked Juno a lot. I wanted to be like a, I was like, oh, I think I want to be like a screenwriter, like a comedic television writer. So I did like some, like a summer camp at Second City one time and like,
oh, cool.
Some like a couple things there, I guess, over the years. And then when I was in high school, I started like a club, and this kid the year above me came, who actually Nate lives with, because we all used to live together, and now Nate and him are still roommates. But my friend Steve, he was just like, hey, I do stand-up. Like, you should come. I was like 16, and I was like, oh, okay. And then I started going to open mics, and I was like, oh, like, this is really fun. Hmm. But it was weird being a child at open mics, where most, especially when Steve had left to go to college, I was like, oh, I don't actually really like being the only teenager around.
What kind of material did you have at that point? Do you remember any of it?
I wasn't good at actually practicing. Like, I would be whatever I was thinking about that day. Just a lot of things about, I guess, like, identity, because I'm, like, mixed race. I remember I made some jokes about kind of being biracial, and I never actually got good at it. Like, I didn't bomb. I bombed once, but it wasn't like I was bombing every time, but I wasn't doing the thing you actually had to do to get good at it. I was mostly going and talking for 5 minutes about whatever I wanted to talk about.
And that then, sounds, that's what stand-up is. I mean, I think you're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I did it. But I stopped doing it actually mostly when I started going to shows. I kind of was, got way more into music. I went to college though for screenwriting. Like I studied that. And I kind of planned on doing that until the day I graduated, when I was like, doesn't really seem like anything was happening. And then this started happening, and now this is what I do.
I don't want to sound disrespectful. If you view your lyricism as a sincere and serious art form that is not meant to, has no connection to comedy, I find your phrasing and some of your lyrics to be very amusing. And as you mentioned, Saturday Night Live, helmed by Canadian Lorne Michaels, and Juno, starring Canadian Elliot Page. And in a song on your new album, you interpolate Cinnamon Girl by Neil Young and Crazy Horse. Are you obsessed with Canada? Do you think that Canada has a huge role in your life somehow?
Now that you say it, I guess so. I never really... I'm obsessed with the idea that Canada and the U.S. aren't the same place.
Right. You've been to Canada how many times, would you say?
This year we went like 4 times.
This year alone? Canada, okay.
Yeah, this is our Canada year. Before that, I went twice last year and once or twice when I was like 3 or 4.
Okay.
But I don't remember.
Okay. I appreciate this, and I'm sorry to throw a Canadian curveball at you. I'm picking up on something. Nate, I want you to be just a division of labor. I think people view the band as Nate, you do a lot of the noise and sound, and Rachel does some of the singing and the lyrics. Is that right? Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
So what is your, I just want to ask about your perspectives on each other a little bit. Nate, do you think Rachel's funny? What do you think about her approach to lyric writing? Because I see in the credits you work on things together.
Yeah.
Both the arrangements, the vocal melodies, these sorts of things. Is it important for something that you bring to the table for each other to amuse you as much as it does anything else? Is that significant?
Definitely. Well, I think that's what keeps us focused. You know, if it's not something that engages us, I feel like it never ends up really getting finished. And, you know, comedy is just part of the emotional spectrum. And I think something that has become a focus for us within music is allowing the entire bandwidth of human emotion as we experience it to be expressed. And the lighter aspects make the darker aspects pop and vice versa.
Do you see the music as imbuing what you do with the darkness and the... This isn't true. I'm already correcting myself because some of the lyrics are very heavy.
Yeah.
And some of the singing is very earnest and beautiful. But then within that, there's this, I think, personally, if you correct me if you disagree, I think within the delivery, there is the levity sometimes, like with how Rachel is singing a song and the words even. You know, we mentioned the recess outside your window there, Rachel, and there are songs where you're just counting. And I have a 12 and an 8-year-old who have been listening to your record, and they're starting to know it, and they're starting to sing along. And at first, I think, I'll be honest with you, at first they're like, what is this? What's going on? Now they're like, is this the song about the truth? Like, they're starting to ask questions. They're engaging with it. So all this to say, there's a playful aspect and a sincere aspect to your approach as a singer and a songwriter. Is that fair to say, Rachel?
Yeah, I feel like this project in particular is and has always, maybe not all, there's a middle point, but I feel like started out as something that was very fun, and like we were playing around with the music, and it's like gotten to a point where I think we take it much more seriously than at the beginning, because it was, I guess, kind of a joke at the beginning, and now it's not, it's
now it's our job.
Yeah, now it's our job.
Yeah,
but I think that, I mean, I feel like the thing that we like to do most is laugh together.
Yeah,
I feel like that's kind of, if I think about all my favorite memories of me and Nate, it's us laughing or competitively playing cards, which also can induce laughter. But yeah, I don't know. I guess there are things, I guess, in the songs that are trying to speak to something a little bit more emotionally heavier. And I think that for me, like, approaching things that are emotionally heavy, I have to, like, there has to be a lighter side or else I can't cope.
The album bio for this record, Everyone's Crushed, has one of the best openings of any album bio I've seen. I don't know who wrote it. Life is horribly dark right now, and yet it is not unfunny. I relate to that on many levels, and I think it's something of a summation of what you're trying to get to, I think. Is that fair, Rachel?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we have to laugh at how everyone's crushed and how everyone's crushed is a, I don't know if it's a, it has a, does that have a double meaning from your perspective? Because I couldn't.
I feel like it has like a holographic meaning. It means like kind of an infinite amount of things.
Yeah.
To me.
Who coined that phrase?
Of the two?
Nate did. Okay.
No. So that song was one that I wrote some of the core lyrics for that song, but the phrase everyone's crushed was not actually part of it. That's from the middle verse that Rachel wrote.
Okay.
And maybe, so. Well, that phrase came up, we were both in the room when that phrase came up.
What do you suppose, Rachel, that means? Like, that song is such an interesting linguistic exercise and about meaning, intent, what language can be capable of, I think, on some level, I think. That's my reading of it. I don't want to sound like the English major that I was and graduate that I was, but I find it linguistically interesting as a song, and it is the title track. So I view it as having some sort of conceptual umbrella concept notion to it. You've given the album this title. I think, as I said earlier, this album to me seems to distinguish itself from your past records in very unique ways. So something's going on. This is a and you can disagree with that too. By the way, guys, you can disagree with anything I say. I don't mean to keep saying that. Anything I say, if it's wrong, you don't like it, just holler. I'm just saying. I think there's a lot going on with it, and it has that sense of humor as well in the title track and throughout this record. Rachel, can you talk about this sentiment of everyone's crushed? And then I hope as we go, we can talk about what this album kind of means and the trajectory of what you two have been working on. But let's start with the actual conceptual idea first. Can you speak to that, Rachel?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, this album really came together sort of in, I guess, 2020. And I feel like everybody was just so beat down and, like, it felt like we were being kind of crammed into this situation that nobody had any answers to, and it was like everybody was so stuck and really, like, physically stuck.
Yeah.
But also I feel like then emotionally kind of trapped in these things that, like, at least for me, it was like all this stuff I'd just been putting off, like these problems that I had in my head that I didn't have any time for before that suddenly was like, oh, okay, like now all I have is time, and like now all I can really do is like think about how I've been living and like how I've been approaching things. And this song is definitely very specific. Like Nate brought kind of the, I feel like the idea of it, and it has, I think we have different problems, so for Nate, I think that this had a lot more to do with substances.
Oh.
Yeah, that was definitely, like, when we did However It Happened land on the phrase everyone's crushed, I, like, immediately was like, that's, like, the, because I feel like it just, it means a lot of different things, you know. There's the physical thing, there's, I feel like at the point when it was made, a lot of the people that I knew were just like struggling with depression, so there's an emotional thing, but then it also does have this kind of, like, you know, at the risk of being too graphic, a lot of the people I was around, like the image of like crushing pills, yeah, was like also part of why it resonated with me. And it all kind of like lends to this idea that it seemed like everyone was stuck in their own particular limbo at the time. And it just immediately, because it was funny, because that song originally, when I brought the demo to Rachel, and it just had the verse that it starts it and the verse that ends it was all I had, and it was just kind of this repeated almost like mantra type thing. Like,
yeah, it has like
it was
like a meditative quality almost.
Yeah, and this sort of like acceptance and meditation on the nature of forgiveness in spite of your problems, you know, the people around you and the world around you understanding and forgiving you for like whatever it is that you've done and put yourself through or put other people through, and the weird overlap between those two things.
Yeah.
For me, that song is like, personally, like a lot of the album, you know, I would just kind of have these like lyrical prompts that I would give to Rachel, and then they would turn it into like its own thing. But that song, for me, just because of the moment that it was made, that's like the song that I relate to the most on the album, on like a personal level.
Yeah. We've been talking about the balance of humor and darkness, and I don't know how to characterize your band in terms of any kind of, you know, conventional genre signifier. But the one thing I'll say is, given what I know about music and the music I've heard, this record seems to, again, I don't mean to be lazy, but some of the elements we've been discussing also fall in line with what we call post-punk. Certainly late 70s, early 80s, onset of new wave, but also that kind of heavy humor, like heavy and funny at the same time. We've talked about a few other kinds of musical influences. I'm going to go to Nate on this first, though. Is post-punk, if you will, and by post-punk I'm like Gang of Four, like the guitar kind of, I hate using these phrases because they're all kind of rote by now, but like, you know, it's just like a slashy guitar and it comes in, yeah, and out, and it's sort of unsettling when it comes in tonally and whatnot. Is post-punk, if you will, an influence on you?
I mean, I feel like a lot of the music that I played in the past was influenced by that. It's definitely like baked into it, but that's never been a focus for me so much. In terms of the kind of like angular cutting guitar, for me, it kind of relates more to like, honestly, like the Beatles, like the really like harsh guitar parts that yeah. pop up in that kind of like.
Taxman, you a big Taxman fan? You like the song yeah. Taxman? That's the kind of guitar too, like meh, meh, like that kind of, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That like really like, it's like sometimes very contained but aggressive, and then sometimes just like explodes and it's just so like out of control.
I feel like I've just touched upon something. I feel like the root to all things Water From Your Eyes might be the song Taxman from the 1966 album Revolver. There's a lot.
Revolver played big into this album. I mean, Barley and Buy My Product both started as experiments based on Barley in particular. Like the whole idea was to make like a, from like an instrumental point, to make like a Tomorrow Never Knows type thing with yeah. a static beat, a single root note, and then all these different things that kind of like float around on top that all change the emotional implication of what's yeah. happening a little bit, and to bring them in different layers.
And, right.
You know, and then every time there's a different combination of things, it means something else. And then if you take one thing away, then it changes entirely.
Very interesting. Yeah. This gives yeah. me some insight into the kind of, whatever, psychedelic kaleidoscopic nature of this album in particular.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm a big Beatles fan. I don't know if my listeners are familiar with this band from Liverpool, but they're very good. And they did a lot of cool stuff. They're no longer together, but I like them very much. And I'm sorry, you were going to say something else there, Nate.
Oh, you know, obviously there's like all, everything you do is inevitably affected by the totality of the things you've consumed in your life. But
yeah.
for me, sonically, like particularly like that era of the Beatles, like Revolver was a huge influence. But then in terms of the kind of balance between comedy and tragedy, I think for me the primary influence was Ween.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
They're like one of my favorite bands ever, and that's something that they just do so well. And I feel like so much of music shies away from being funny, as if it automatically yeah. makes something a joke, that I feel like they get kind of a bad rap.
Yeah.
Because they didn't shy away from that. But that's, you know, that's, it's all part of drama. It's all equally important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Part of the drama in this band for me is, Rachel, your approach as a vocalist. There's been a slight, I think, for me anyway, something of an interesting explosion of what I would call speak singing of late. And I love it. I mean, it creates this real directness to the listener, like you're hearing a voice, and sometimes your voice can be sort of almost a cappella, and it has been on other records for sure. Can you talk a little bit about any influences you've had in your approach as a singer, dare I say, a presenter in Water From My Eyes, like a host almost?
I've never thought about it like that. Yeah, I guess I am kind of like a host. Should get a little tuxedo, one of those sticks to, I don't,
you need
I don't actually
like a
know.
Cane?
You need a desk. Every time you
yeah,
need a desk, like a talk show set.
That you go.
Yeah.
Or yeah, or a desk. Yeah. I guess, yeah, it's a different direction. There's
I've got
so many
my,
directions.
Got my late show with David Letterman mug right here. So I'm a fan of the late night talk show. So I didn't mean to, I hope I didn't misconstrue what you do, but do you see where I'm kind of coming from?
Yeah, I don't really think about, I'm not a trained singer. Like, I couldn't do a vocal run to save my life. Like, hold a gun up to me and it's, I'm dead. Like, I don't, and I've never thought of myself as a singer. Like, I made my own music and like, but for me it wasn't like to exercise my singing voice, but rather to expel my demons of emotions.
You know what's funny? As an SNL fan, as a fan of comedy, we're getting into the realm of theatricality. Musicals, maybe. Again, for those who've never heard a note of Water From Your Eyes, they are not a band that does musicals. However, if you think about it, and I'm just putting this out there, again, correct me if I'm wrong, sometimes the pacing of a record and the arrangements on this record, they're close to almost like a musical. You're listening to someone, they're kind of conversing with you, and then all of a sudden, there's a melody. They're singing a song. Is this bad, what I'm saying? Is it insulting?
No. I think I would more so than musicals. I mean, album pacing is something that I've always been like very sensitive to and careful with. And more so than musicals, I would say it's almost influenced by like books and movies. Or I guess just like anything that involves pacing, like the concept of tension and release is something that is constantly being worked with on like a micro and a macro level.
What about concept records? You mentioned a few mediums and platforms or whatever, ways of doing things. No?
I think, I mean, to me, like any good record is a concept record. I think a lot of the concept records that are more literal, then it begins to really feel like a musical. And that's not really my thing. I kind of hate musicals. I like certain songs from certain musicals. I really like Scrooge the Musical. That's my favorite musical.
I know in America, one of the most popular date night movies musicals right now is Beetlejuice. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. There was some fiasco there that happened in your country with that. Maybe you don't know what I'm talking about, and we don't have to talk about it.
I have no idea.
Well, just for background, a few months ago, one of your politicians there, that Lauren Boebert.
Oh, I do know what you're talking about. Yeah, that was crazy.
They got kind of handsy at the Beetlejuice musical, and it was very weird, and it's been quite a year for America, as always. So I just want to say that. Sorry, Rachel. I was trying to get to you and your approach. You say you don't have any formal training. I invoked theatricality. If not musicals, would you agree there's like a theatrical bent to how you approach a song per se? Maybe you wouldn't put it that way. You tell me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, Nate is kind of like my director. Like, a lot of the times, there's a few songs on this record where I did the melodies as well, but a lot of the times, Nate will write the melody, and then I try to do it. There was a certain point in this project, I remember, maybe like a couple records back, that I've never thought of myself really as a musician, and there was like a certain point that I was like, dude, I can't hit this note. And he'd be like, no, you can. It sounds like this. And I'd be like, this? And he'd be like, no, not that, this. But it, to me, would sound the same.
Yeah, sure.
And, like, even, like, in performance-wise, like, I feel like it is... Not that, like, we're particularly theatrical. Like, I don't think anybody comes to our shows thinking, like, wow, that band is really putting on a... like a performance. I think a lot of people are like, man, these people are wandering around the stage.
I invoked post-punk earlier. Do you think of yourselves as punks, Rachel?
I think that word is funny. I think when I was 18, I would have loved to have been, like, I really wanted to be a punk. I thought that the idea of kind of rejecting conformity and trying to, like, create out of not nothing, but like out of something just entirely different than what is like being presented to you as normal life, and like trying to create a different world that like people can exist in without judgment and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I think, I don't know, I think that a lot of the idea of punk has to do with how much leather and jean you wear.
Well, but that's the fashion. Yeah, I know where you're coming from here. It can be a loaded term. For me, it's an ethos, and it's a very sincere and serious irreverence, and I feel like that's swimming around in your band. It's what we've been, like that line I alluded to earlier from your bio, like things are shitty often. We have to try to have hope and optimism. We have to try to find the fun in it and the things, the spirit that brings us together, not just dwell on. We can speak to those things, as I think you do on some level in your own personal way. But I think you're getting at that. a little bit. That serious irreverence in this band. Does that help clarify where I'm coming from by saying punk?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that definition. I think I would be honored to be punk in that way, that I would, it would feel like a very highly regarded, like, state to, or I guess ethos to be participating in.
Well, listen, I don't want to blindside you both with an honor, but I hereby decree that you are punks. And I, as a punk, I appreciate where you're coming from. It is a bit of an anything goes exploratory band. And I think that's where, that's what punk means to me. It's not about the style and the fashion stuff that you're talking about. It's an ethos. And I, so for what it's worth, you are hereby punks. And please don't diminish what punk means. This is quite an honor. It's quite a responsibility. Now, I want to ask you about something I alluded to earlier, which is continuity. This record begins with a song that is named after your previous album. I maintain, as I have listened to your catalog, that this album, stands out a bit. Can you, Nate, speak to those two things? Can you talk about why you've connected the first song in your new album to the previous album? And secondly, how would you engage with what I'm saying, that this seems like a different sort of band at this point? Can you speak to those things?
Well, for the first thing, I mean, that opening track, we really didn't know what to call it because it's kind of like a prelude or intro. And it was very much, I think it was like marked as prelude for a while, because that's one thing I was really into, was listening to organ preludes, and that's how that started, as like an organ piece. I think it was Rachel's idea to just, rather than call it prelude, we're like, well, the prelude to this album is structure, the album, so let's just call it that. And I thought that was like the funniest shit I'd ever heard. So we committed to that very quickly. But I think this album, there are a couple things that shifted dramatically. Just talking about the album structure, where everything is very heavily layered and there is more conscious blurring and masking of in the presentation. And this album, it was intentionally very raw, kind of edges exposed in all aspects of production, probably most obviously in the way the vocals are presented. In the past, a lot of the vocals have been multi-tracked and like slightly washed out. Whereas with this album, the point was, or the idea was, to essentially put Rachel in front of a mic, get the take, and then not really touch it. And to leave it, everything very, very exposed. And I think that was something that happened naturally, but also a huge part of the process with this band for the last couple albums has been like transmedium influence. So I look a lot to different painters, and structure was very much influenced by Mark Rothko and this kind of like blurring the duration of time and like having it be sort of out of focus in a very high definition way. And Everyone's Crushed was very directly inspired by the work of Francis Bacon, which is like a totally different thing. And so really, in terms of the presentation of the sound from a production standpoint, I would credit it to that. And then that kind of ethos then began to kind of permeate the whole process, with the idea of it being very immediate and exposed and almost improvisational, and capitalizing on accidents and then bringing those accidents into focus as much as possible. And, you know, even in the lyric writing part of it, you know, we would get together and I would sort of, you know, sometimes I'd have a melody or like one line of lyrics or like a more vague prompt and be like, do something like this, and then would capture Rachel's kind of like immediate response to that prompt, and then that would be it. So I think there's something much more immediately reactionary about this album, more so than overthinking and being like, okay, we want to do this, we want to communicate this. It was really about capturing these tiny moments and presenting them in as unprocessed a way as possible.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. That is, I guess, my theory holds up in terms of its distinction from what you've done in the past. Rachel, similar line of questioning and I guess now thoughts on what Nate is saying. Can you talk about this record in terms of how it relates to how you've worked in the past? And as the vocalist, you know, given what Nate's saying, you know, that everything's more immediate, that puts you kind of front and center more somehow. Can you speak to those things?
Yeah, I mean, this record, I mean, structure was written very soon after we had kind of moved out of, we used to date and live together. And so structure, a lot of those songs were kind of written while we were breaking up, like the music, and then the lyrics were written sort of a few months after we had moved out. And it was actually the first time that we had really hung out, just the two of us, after everything. And it felt really nice to be able to just hang out again and not have it be weird. And then the record before that was actually, I feel like, the most difficult one to make, because it was kind of just at this height of being, it was like too many dynamics to be navigating. And then before that, it was like all these records were kind of like just goofy and fun, and like felt kind of like a residual of when we had started it from Chicago, and then it was like a long distance thing. And then this is like the first album that I feel like feels representative of where our band is and like how far we've really come. I feel like it's, I mean, it's so different than the first records, but also, I mean, like our relationship is so different. And it definitely feels like the first one that was like really collaborative in like a grown-up way. Like, I feel like when we used to collaborate, it was like, isn't this funny? And this one was like, oh man, like, I feel awful. Isn't that funny? And, like, I feel like it's a real testament to our friendship that I feel like we're much more honest with each other now about how we're doing. And I think it comes through in the music that I feel like our ability to sort of be tackling things in personal and societal, like, ills, like, that kind of stuff, it's a lot. I feel like we can talk about it, and it doesn't, it feels like we're being there for each other in this project, I feel like, is us kind of being there for each other. And this is, yeah, I feel like this is the first one that it's felt like we're both in this different stage of our creative endeavors, and that we were able to like come together and like actually really work together in a much more serious way that wasn't like plagued by like our animosities towards each other.
It's actually a really lovely story, to be honest, from my perspective, to see people go through what you've gone through together and mature together and grow together and all those sorts of words, but also come out the other side with maybe a more fully realized version of this project than you anticipated having. Like, it's a nice, I'm just saying, it's a nice story. And beyond this wonderful album that came out, Everyone's Crushed, there's a remix. Is this the right term? There's a new thing called Crushed by Everyone. And it's a remix record. Nate, is that a way to characterize it?
Yeah, I guess so. For lack of a better term, it's a remix.
You guys have a tendency to release a thing and then later release a sort of different version of the thing. I don't know if you've done this consistently, but you'll put out like the demos of Structure or something like that. Is this a consistent of like, here's the alternate universe of that, the record?
I don't think it's really ever been quite so planned out. But the remix record was something that kind of just seemed like it would be fun. Like, we just kind of had an excuse to do it, so we did it.
Okay. And sorry, just to be clear, this is remixes by others, right?
Yeah, we did one.
Okay.
But other than that, it's all other people, friends, and artists that we admire.
Rachel, what did you make of the remix record as it started to take shape in terms of how people kind of interpreted where this music you and Nate made together could go?
I really love all the remixes. I feel like everybody, I love all those projects, so it was just like fun to hear them do their thing, but it's our songs. I'll be honest though, when Nate originally pitched this, I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, so what?
Yeah, yeah. You were hesitant.
I was just like, we're gonna put out an album that's the album we put out, but they're all gonna be remixes by people. And I was just like, is this something people do? And it was like, everybody does it. And I was all right.
that's fascinating. It is pretty common. It's a bit of a throwback, actually. I don't know how often it happens now, to be honest with you, but it's something that used to happen quite a bit. So I appreciate your cynicism, but it's not that unusual. And it sounds cool. I like the notion of hearing a different take on these great songs. So all this to say, I just want to congratulate you both on all your success, and I want to thank you for joining me for this time. I hope it was enjoyable. As I look ahead, my understanding of some of your future plans is some touring coming up in February of 2024. Nate, are there other future plans you can tell us about for Water From Your Eyes, and any more touring plans beyond what I've just... what I'm outlining is something I'm seeing about some American touring in February, but is there a lot more coming down the pipe?
We're playing some festivals in the summer. I mean, I think we're going to be kind of bopping all over the place next year. It's definitely going to be a show heavy year. I'd have to look at the calendar to get more.
No, yeah, sorry. We can direct people to your websites and stuff, yeah. I suppose, right? Is that the easiest thing to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I always forget that we have a website.
It's a nice website. It's good. I like your website. I looked at it and I was like, oh, it's very comprehensive. Tour dates, and you're on, Rachel, you guys on social media and stuff?
Yeah. We're all over the internet posting away as one does.
So you got that going on, and that's where people can go to learn about these records and tour dates. Nate, are you already, I know you're home for a bit, I think. Are you already working on new material?
Yeah, I'm always kind of like I'm waiting for something to lift off. I'm really racking up the false starts with the next album. There have been like upwards of 10 times where I've been like, this is it. And like, and then it's just not. So as of this moment, I have like close to 90 minutes of music that I don't think we're going to use for anything. Mm. And I'm tapping my foot and patiently waiting for something to take hold, which takes a little while sometimes.
Yeah. Rachel, are you writing?
No, there's some books I want to read, and I have to move out of my apartment.
Oh, no.
By the end of January, and I've lived here for 4 years, so I was laying awake in bed last night wondering, how do you put things in the boxes? How will I do this?
That's daunting. Do you already have a new place?
I'm going to put my stuff into storage, and then I will hopefully someday have a house again.
Oh, my God. Oh, jeez. Okay. Where are you? It's none of my business. I'm sure you have a plan. We don't have to get into it. I'm sure you have some place to stay. But I do feel badly for all the 12-year-olds who aren't going to benefit from your basketball and life knowledge. That's too bad. But hopefully you can teach others your ways and make them better people. So that's great. Well, I wish you the best of luck with that, obviously, and both of you the best of luck going forward. If we can go out on a song, I presume we should go out on something from the record proper, unless we want to go out on something from the remix. It's up to you. I'm going to pose this to you. So we either go out on something from Crushed by Everyone or Everyone's Crush. So, sorry, I'm just explaining myself to you and giving you time to think. I'm going to go to Nate on the pick, but Rachel, you have veto power. If you don't like his pick, we can have a short debate. So it's got to be brief, though. I can't go on and on. Nate, if we could go out on one song from either of the recent releases, what would you pick and why?
I think I'm going to go with the main album version of True Life to go back to the Canada thing. And also because that was, I think that was my favorite song to make on the album, because I was just like, Rachel, this needs to be our short skirt, long jacket by Cake. And they really delivered.
This is for those who don't know, this has, you will hear a familiar song swimming around in this song, and it'll plague you for a little bit until you realize what the song is, and it has been alluded to already. Rachel, what do you make of that pick, and do you accept it?
I support Nate in whatever he chooses.
Okay, do you want to say anything about the CanCon, Canadian content, I should say, for my American friends? We call it CanCon up here.
CanCon.
Do you want to say anything about? I was going to go to Rachel on it though. I just in terms of the interpolate or Nate, do you have something? You know what? Who am I to say? I'm only the host. You say what you were going to say.
the CanCon.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yes.
The CanCon was the only lyrics that I like even that I could come up with for this song before Rachel came over.
Oh.
And I gave them the Cake prompt. And then we couldn't even do it because this particular Canadian's lawyers wouldn't let us use the actual lyrics. So we had to later on change the lyrics so that they're about how this particular Canadian wouldn't let us use his lyrics, which honestly almost works better for the concept.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we still use his lyrics live because, you know.
Are we allowed to name the Canadian?
Well, we have already.
I think it's more like a Where's Waldo thing.
I kind of want to leave it. I know we've already named it and people will be able to figure it out, but let's leave it. Let's let the listeners figure it out. Sorry, Rachel, did you want to say anything more about True Life before we hear it?
Oh, I also actually had the best time making this song. I also think this was the song that Nate showed me that I was like, whoa, this one's crazy, man. I love it.
All right, well, let's hear it now from Everyone's Crush, this great 2023 release by Water From Your Eyes. This is True Life. Rachel, Nate, thank you so much for spending time with me today. I hope, like I said, I hope you enjoyed this in some measure and that maybe we speak again soon someday, and best of luck in the future. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Tell me something, I haven't been told true life. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That was very nice and fun to encounter Rachel and Nate. Rachel and Nate, thanks for being on the show to talk about Water From Your Eyes and other things. This happens to be the 831st episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. In the show notes, you'll see a thing that says follow Vish online, and there you can learn how to follow me on various social media platforms. I am on Instagram at Vish Khanna and on Twitter at Vish Khanna, and the show has a Twitter at Vish Creative, but there's other things as well, Blue Sky and Threads or whatever. There's all that stuff. I got to update the show link tree thing. But anyway, click on that if you want to learn more about how to follow me. You can also click on that or the Patreon hyperlink there to visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to sustain this podcast. That's all the money I really make doing this work is from the Patreon. So if you can, please go there and donate. $6 US a month grants you access to exclusive content and other perks. We're doing giveaways and stuff now, prize packs for certain tier levels. So we do draws for prizes and things every month if we can. And it's fun. So if you like the show and you'd like me to keep doing it, and you can give me some money to do it, that would be great. Please, again, visit our Patreon and support the show if you can. Thanks so much. Thanks again also to the fine Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, which you can learn more about and order records directly from their website there at blackbird.ca. I also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. I want to thank my good friend Jim Guthrie for lending me some music that I can use on this show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Water From Your Eyes. If you're a big fan, I hope you learned something about them. If you're unfamiliar with them, I also hope you learned a lot about them. They seem really lovely. We had a nice chat after we stopped rolling, and I don't know, we seem to get along quite well. So that always makes me happy, and I love their music. So a win-win, at least two wins. So thank you for listening to this episode. Check out Water From Your Eyes and their music. Go see them live if you can, too. And otherwise, I will talk to you very soon. If you can, subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it. That would be helpful, too. But yeah, like I say, I'll talk to you real soon. Have fun. Bye for now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.